Well, as Carl said in the first introduction, my name is Daniel Schaefer, and I'm currently with MFA. Work mainly with their HealthTrack Beef Alliance there as a marketing assistant. And I'd like to thank him for that introduction he gave earlier, as well as thanking NCBA and the people that organized Cattlemen's College for the opportunity to be here and speaking with you today. And it's certainly a pleasure and honor to be here. Before I get started, I want to tell a little bit of a story about a father who had two sons. They were actually twin boys. And these two boys were just polar opposites. They were on complete opposite sides of the spectrum. One son was the eternal optimist. He could see nothing bad in anybody, anything. You know, everything was going positive for him at all times. The other boy, on the other hand, he was just complete opposite. He was the eternal pessimist. You know, nothing good in the world was going on. There was nothing good happening to him. It was just always down in the face, down in the mouth, you know, just poor him. Well, the father on Christmas one day decided he was going to give these boys a lesson. And he was, since they were so different, they had trouble getting along. He decided we're gonna throw a little wrench into Christmas. And he said we're going to make the other one walk a mile in the other twin's shoes for a day. So for Christmas, he got the pessimistic boy all the toys, nicest electronics, you know, all the gifts that a boy his age could possibly want. Now, the optimistic boy, in his room, he put a big pile of manure. So Christmas morning comes along, and he's walking down the hallway. He stops, and he peeks in the room of the pessimistic boy. And the little boy's just sitting there on the corner of the bed, head down. He's crying a little bit. He said, "Well, son, what's wrong?" He said, "I got all these toys, Dad." And he said, "You know, first off, my friends are going to be jealous. I'm going to have to put batteries in all these tools, and the batteries are just going to go dead, and the toys are eventually going to break." He said, it's terrible, Dad." And the father was kind of disappointed. He said, "You know, that certainly wasn't the outcome I was anticipating here." So he goes down the hall a little bit further to the son that had manure in his room. And in there, the boy's just jumping on the bed, doing flips in the air, you know, as excited as all get out. And he said, "Well, son, what are you so excited about?" He said, "Well, look at my Christmas gift, Dad." The father said, "Well, yeah, I see that. Do you realize that's manure?" And he goes, "Yeah, I know. Isn't it great?" He said, "Well, what's so great about that?" The boy said, "Well, with this much manure, I just know there's got to be a pony around here somewhere." You know, the thing about that story is sometimes, not often, but sometimes I think we see things a little more closely through the eyes of the pessimistic boy in the beef industry rather than the optimistic. And I don't mean a negative attitude and down in the mouth, things of that nature, as much as what I do. Sometimes we don't see the opportunities that are in front of us whenever we don't see things through the optimistic boy's eyes and the opportunity that he had with the pile of manure. And the reason I say that is synchronization has been around basically in the form that it is today, a little different synchronization methods. But the same basic principles and practice that we're using today have been in place for the last 25 to 30 years. And in that same time frame, and maybe even longer than that, we have known of all the benefits that go along with estrus synchronization in AI, such as the ability to induce non-cycling females, whether that be postpartum anestrus cows or prepubertal heifers, when a progestin is used in the synchronization protocol, that as a result of stimulating that animal to begin cycling normally than what she would have on her own natural cycle, we can produce older and heavier calves at either the time of weaning or marketing, whatever time frame you want to look at there. As Mike mentioned, we have the ability with these systems to concentrate the calving seasons and minimize the labor that's necessary to be out there checking animals, so on and so forth. Depending on herd size, we have the potential to reduce the number of bulls that we have to keep and maintain on our farms. And as a result, that opens the door. If you only have to have fewer natural service bulls on your farm, you have the opportunity to potentially spend more dollars per head on each of those bulls. We can get predictable growth, improved carcass characteristics, replacement female quality, so on and so forth. But with all those benefits in mind, the most recent surveys have only shown that 5 to 10% of beef producers in the United States are using any form of AI. So despite the fact that this technology has existed for a many number of years and been used successfully during that time period by the folks that have used it, it hasn't hasn't captured white acceptance rates. So with that in mind, what have the production practices that we've implemented over the last years, how has that affected the quality of beef that we're putting on the consumer's table? And if you look over here on the left side, there's a set of bars that represent percentage of cattle grading choice or better, and the right set of bars represent cattle that are grading select or worse. The red bar on the left side of each set corresponds to a time frame from 1994 to 96, and then we're going on through history here to where the green bar is 2006. If you look at this slide, what you see is there hasn't been a vast improvement in the quality of cattle, wholesalely, an improvement in the quality of cattle that are being produced in this country. So with that in mind, how is technology being accepted in other countries? And in particular, I want to take a look at AI use in the United States in comparison to Brazil. The United States, over the last 10 to 15 years, has been relatively stable in the number of units of semen reported to NAAB by the major AI organizations, and it's fluctuated. Import and domestic semen sales have fluctuated in the United States right around that 1 million units per year range. But in the 10-year period from 1993 to 2003, the United States saw an 8% decrease in the use of AI when looking at import and domestic semen sales. Brazil, on the other hand, during that same time frame, saw a 161% increase in their use of AI. Now, the first thing that comes to mind is, well, okay, down in Brazil, a large percentage of that was Bos indicus influenced semen. And some of it was. But the breed that represented the largest percentage of those semen sales in that number was Red Angus. A lot of it was Red Angus genetics exported from this country down to Brazil. So they're importing our technology and our genetics to improve the quality of cattle that they are raising down there. You know, I was at a presentation that Larry Corr was giving here a few months ago, and Larry, of course, is a little bit prejudiced to high-quality or high-grading cattle. But he made a statement in there in his presentation. He said, you know, if the world ever acquires a taste for select beef, we are in trouble. Because he said there's a number of other countries out there that can produce a lot more select beef for a lot less money than what we can. And there's a lot of truth to that if you think about that statement. The quality of our beef that we have is our strong foothold in the global marketplace. But I think unless we do things to maintain that foothold and keep that strength there, you have to question what will be our future position in the global marketplace. As I said, recent surveys show that only 5 to 10% of beef producers in the United States are using AI. And in a National Animal Health and Monitoring Service survey back in 1998, they asked the question of why producers were not using different reproductive techniques in their herds, and in particular, estrus synchronization, artificial insemination, and pregnancy diagnosis. And their survey results showed that far and away the number one reason that producers gave for not implementing these three technologies was a lack of time and labor, as indicated up here by the red bars. Now, secondary reasons as to why these technologies weren't implemented included the effect of cost, the procedure being either too complicated or confusing, and then various other reasons. Now, I will say that since this survey was completed back in 1998, there has been development of different protocols that facilitate the use of fixed-timed AI in cow herds, and Mike did a good job of talking about that, and the percentages of animals that we can get pregnant in these timed AI systems oftentimes is just as great, if not a little bit higher, than what was able to be attained with heat detection and AI on the basis of heat. So there have been steps to address the time and labor that is necessary to both synchronize and successfully AI groups of animals. Now, as far as the procedures being too complicated, there was a meeting of groups. There's been an establishment of a group of people called the North Central Region Bovine Task Force. A big name for a relatively small group of people. But it consists of university professors in reproductive physiology, people from the AI organizations, as well as the pharmaceutical industry, and some members from the veterinary community that work with synchronization AI protocols on a year-in, year-out basis, on a day-to-day basis. And they meet annually to discuss different protocols that are being tested in research and development, and which protocols are working best, in a various number of different production scenarios and having successful results. And as a result, in an effort to try and cut down on that complication and confusion, as was mentioned earlier, now for I believe the last 2.5 or 3 years, the same list of recommended protocols has been printed in each of the major AI organization SIRE summaries. Exact same protocols, exact same format. So there have been steps taken to address both the time and labor as well as the complication and confusion that was out there in the past since this survey was done. Now, cost is always a big hang-up for folks. Even though it wasn't necessarily even the second-ranking reason that producers didn't use these technologies, cost is always has to be in the back of our minds. You know, there's nothing that is getting cheaper. You know, fuel's going up, feed's going up, everything of that nature. So we have to pay attention to cost. You know, I heard once that if you don't think anybody likes you or thinks you're important, try missing a couple of payments. You know, there's a lot of truth to that, and so we do have to pay attention to cost. And so I wanted to take just a minute to try and justify the cost of an AI program. And if you, I think by doing that, you first have to assess what does it cost to keep a bull around and using a natural service setting on your farm. Well, in terms of feed cost, the only place that I was able to find much data as far as what it costs to feed a bull on a year-round basis is a University of Missouri Extension publication that estimated, you know, between pasture, harvested forages, supplements, minerals, all that stuff, that it cost approximately $346 per year to feed a bull. I would contend that that is low. That's less than a dollar a day, and there'd probably be some people in this room that would give their firstborn son to be able to feed a bull for less than a dollar a day. But nonetheless, this is trying to justify the cost of AI. So if we're a little conservative here in the cost, that's okay. But there are some other costs associated with it as well. And these costs came out of a Kansas State publication where they said, you know, there's labor with moving bulls in and out of breeding pastures. There's vet expenses if you're doing semen checks, things of that. We know bulls are going to tear things up. So you have some repairs that go on there. And I would say if you've priced the new pipe gate here recently, that $31 may be a little bit low for repairs there. But anyway, in that analysis, they came up with $128 per year and other costs associated with having a bull on your farm. So we're looking, on an annual basis, if you add those two numbers together, $474 a year just to keep a bull on your farm, feed him enough to keep him alive and walking and in the pens. Now, if you spread that $474 over the number of cows that he's expected to cover in a year, if you're running one breeding season, pretty typical bull-to-cow ratio in our part of the country when you figure young bulls and everything into the mix is, I think, going to be somewhere right in that 1-to-25 ratio, which brings your cost per cow in a natural service system for variable cost to just under $19. So what is the cost of a synchronization and AI program? And what I have up here is probably the most expensive in terms of out-of-pocket cost for a synchronization and AI program. But you're going to have costs for prescription drugs, seeders. I've got semen plugged in at $14, labor at $8.75. That is what we figure at our own research farm it actually costs to administrate both the synchronization and the AI process with man hours that we have invested in the whole process. And then cleanup bulls. I put a cleanup bull cost in here that is half of that for what it is for a straight natural service. So basically, that is a one bull per 50 cows ratio. So you're basically assuming that you're going to get 50% of the cows pregnant to the timed AI to get back to that 1-to-25 ratio. And the numbers Mike showed you are much better than that with the results we're getting in fixed timed AI programs today. And I've got a few numbers to support that here later on. So at initial glance, AI appears to be about $31.75 more expensive. But we know that through genetic selection, we can add weight to our animals. And there's certainly an advantage to be had there. So if you figure a 50% pregnancy rate to the AI and that we can add 10 pounds of weight through genetic selection, that's basically five pounds per every animal exposed. And if calves are worth a dollar, that's a $5 advantage to the AI system, bringing the total difference to $26.75 at this point. One of the biggest bangs for your buck you can get is the benefit from synchronization and the added calf days and weight as a result of older age from the synchronization. Now, there's some different research projects out there that have stated that the average age increase as a result of synchronization is between 7 and 13 days per calf. So if you say you're going to fall right in the middle of that and on an average pick up about 10 days as a result of the synchronization, 10 days in age, and those calves are going to gain about 2 pounds a day, that's roughly a 480 to 500-pound weaning weight on a 205-day basis. And calves are again worth $1 a pound. We're looking at a $20 advantage we pick up just from added age as a result of the synchronization, which brings our difference down to $6.75 per cow. Now, we still have other advantages that I mentioned earlier, such as decreased labor come calving time, the potential to reduce the number of bulls that we have, and that can be a profitable situation just from having to buy fewer tums at Walmart from getting out and terrorizing different things. But we also have carcass characteristics and replacement females. The other thing I want to point out is we have not figured in any cost, initial cost and salvage value of that bull and depreciated him over a number of years. So in my mind, there is no difference in cost looking at doing a timed AI system versus natural service. And in a lot of scenarios, I think the AI can be done maybe a little less expensive than just exposing bulls. So the only possible solution I can think of is that perhaps part of the reason for the limited use of AI in this country is because there's been little known about the economic incentive that can be gained from using AI, and not only AI, but using proven genetics in an AI program. And that was kind of the whole objective of the experiment that's coming up here that I'm going to talk about. Before I go there, you know, when you're talking to folks about using AI, they always get excited about, you know, you try and talk them into using this 5, 6, 7-year-old bull that's proven with high accuracies, and they say, yeah, you know, I agree. But, you know, I heard about this bull the other day, and he's supposed to be the hottest thing since sliced bread. And he's a yearling or 18-month-old bull with low accuracies, okay? I want to make a football analogy here in that same scenario. And I want you to suppose for a minute you're the GM of a brand-new NFL expansion team, and the biggest part of your job today is to go out and find you a quarterback. Now, I also want to make a clarification here. I made these slides back in December, so this was not a fixed deal. But on opening day, who do you want leading your team on the field? Do you want Peyton Manning, who you can get for $10 million, who's proven over the course of his career that he's going to win about 70 to 75% of the games he starts? Or do you want little brother Eli for $7 million? Who, since he's come into the league, has struggled to play 500 ball. And it's sort of a crapshoot as to what you're going to get. That's essentially the analogy, the same analogy between using high-accuracy bulls and low-accuracy. And not a lot of difference in relative cost value of what it's going to take to use that proven AI semen versus a lower-accuracy semen. So I want you to keep that in mind. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I work for MFA Incorporated, and we applied for and received a USDA Rural Development Value-Added Producer Grant here a year ago in order to do an experiment to determine and compare the economic value or incentives that are out there for calves that either come out of or are produced through a natural service setting, AI to low accuracy bulls, calving ease, or high accuracy. Now, to give you a little bit of background on the set of cattle that were used from this data, these calves were the result of a fixed timed AI experiment that was actually a part of my master's thesis while I was at the University of Missouri. So I got the opportunity to follow these cattle both from conception all the way to harvest. But the original trial where these cattle were produced was a comparison of two synchronization protocols. And there were four locations involved in that trial. And to support Mike's numbers, the results that we saw with these two different trials were in the low to mid-60s at those four locations. So I think it's incredible to think about the opportunity to be able to get 2 out of 3 of every one of your cows pregnant on the first day of the breeding season to one of the best bulls in the world. I think that's incredible and exciting. Now, those same calves that were a result of that experiment were fed on a trial to determine these values. And there were only steers were used in the experiments. These farms retained their own replacement females. But nonetheless, these steers were brought together. They were never implanted. And all the calves were weaned according to the MFA Health Track Program requirements. Given the first round, in this particular case, the first round of vaccinations was given pre-weaning, and the second round was given at weaning, and they had to be kept on that original farm for at least 45 days prior to them moving and coming to the feed yard. Now, calves were all weaned within each location or at each location. They were all weaned on the same day, and all four of the locations weaned within a two-week period. So we had a pretty tight weaning interval. They were fed at the same feedlot, and they all came to that feedlot on the same day, and they were assigned to different pens based on the sire group, so we knew specific inputs for each of these sire groups as far as feed, yardage, et cetera, and could make this true economic assessment. And then, of course, they were assigned on the basis of weight as well. Once they were received at the feedlot, and the actual ration they were fed is sort of irrelevant. The important point is that all the cattle were handled exactly the same from the time they were weaned. But nonetheless, when they were received at the feedlot, they went on an acclimation period of 4 days, were put on a cattle charge product, which is shown to greatly reduce stress and handle high-stress environments and situations very well over the course of years. But we were put on there to make sure that our animal health didn't take a step backwards, and that the cattle got their foot got on all 4 feet and got off the ground in the right manner. They were then bumped up to a 50% limiter, 50% corn ration for 23 days, and then they were on that till 23 days on feed, and then they were bumped up to 75%, 25% limiter for about another month before they went on 87% corn and 13%. Of the ration was a 32% protein supplement. The cattle were harvested on the basis, selected for harvesting or marketing on the basis of both ultrasound back fat measurements as well as visual observation of fat deposition patterns. But they were harvested, and it was not an all-in, all-out type scenario. So we were pulling animals from different pens to be harvested at the appropriate times. But they were harvested, all the cattle, over a 63-day period. And they were on feed from a range of 132 days to 195. And they were all harvested at the same commercial packing facility, collected individual carcass data and things of that nature. And the value differences that I'm getting ready to touch here in a little bit of both feeder cattle and the carcasses were determined using three-year average values with the same base and the same premium schedule. And we know that in real life that's not necessarily the case, but we wanted to eliminate in the economic analysis of this any potential to that may be played out with different market seasonality and variability because of the season. Now, to define the sire groups and give you a little bit of background about the farms that were involved in this study, when they're selecting bulls, they're essentially looking for bulls that can do everything. They want bulls that are going to have not necessarily a light birth weight, but a very moderate birth weight with some good growth after that. They're all retaining replacement females, so they want a high-quality female. And then on top of that, if we can get some carcass, great. But at each of these four farms, there were essentially four different sire groups in this experiment. There was a high-accuracy sire group, which there were 96 head of animals in, and these were defined in the experiment as calves to AI sires with EPD accuracies of greater than 0.85 at the time that the females were mated. Then there were low accuracy sires, which are 101 head of. Those were bulls that were used on cows as well that simply had EPD accuracies for their production traits below 0.85 at the time of AI. There was sort of a subset in here that we wanted to pull out because we didn't know how they would affect different things, how they would affect the economic analysis, and they were sort of a separate group, and that was Cavanese bulls. And there were 38 head of them. Those were steers out of virgin heifers who, while they were still looking for these other traits, they did have to put more selection pressure on Cavanese at these farms. And then the natural service calves were the natural service calves after one round of AI, and there were 93 head of them that used in this experiment. Now, as far as figuring different values for these animals at an end point, the cattle were, as I said, individual carcass measurements were collected. And the grid that they were put on was on the basis of a 50% choice, 50% select pen of cattle, with a $13.72 choice select spread. So essentially, it boils down to, the math-wise is what the economist told me, it basically boils down to there being no par for quality. And that, and because it was on the basis of a 50-50 type pen, there's basically a premium for choice and a discount for select. There was also about a $10 premium for over choice for CAB grading animals, and about a $16 premium over choice for animals grading prime. And there was about a $13 discount for below select for cattle grading standard. Now, yield grade premiums that were used, premiums and discounts, cattle that were yield grade 1 got a $2.98 per hundredweight premium. 2s got a $1.49 per hundredweight. And 3s were par. 4s got about an $8.30 per hundredweight discount. Now, if we look at the net return differences from these different sire groups, from the time that they walked in the front door of the feedlot to when they walked out and were harvested and had individual carcass data, what we see is that and there were some significant differences here, the high accuracy sire group returned a net return higher, significantly higher than all other sire groups. And if you do that comparison, he was roughly right around $50 more in net return over this low accuracy and calving yeast sire groups. So essentially that tells us a couple of things. One, when we use that low accuracy sire group and basically go with Eli rather than Peyton, it you're running a risk. And the cost associated with running that risk, it's pretty much like handing out a $50 bill on the other end. Okay? It also says that in cows, you know, there may be some decreased production either through growth or what have you associated with calving yeast bulls. So if you're breeding cows, don't necessarily select for calving yeast. They can lay down and have a pretty decent sized calf. Now, the high accuracy sire had about a $90 advantage over the natural service calves from these farms. These bulls on these farms were they were very typical of what's used in Missouri. They were not winners, to my knowledge anyway, they were not winners of any bull tests or anything of that nature, but they would be bulls that would fall in the $2,000 to $2,500 price range if you were to go out and purchase them. So they were very acceptable natural service bulls. And as I mentioned, these dollar differences that are shown here are from the period from when they walked in the front door of the feedlot to when they walked out. There was also roughly a $25 to $30 advantage for this high accuracy sire group during the 45 days following weaning when they were still on the farm of origin. So you start, when you look over the course of this animal's entire lifetime, there begins to be some dollars that begin to add up there. Now the question we had is, you know, well that's great, and the steers are an easy value to determine. You know, what is their value differences? But what we began to say is, you know, well what are those replacement females going back into the herd actually worth? And the economist that we were working with said, oh, yeah, if you can get your hands on the pedigree records, we can figure what those estimated cost differences or value differences are in those females. And if you look at the value differences between those high-accuracy sired daughters, which would be half-sibs to the steers that you just saw the data on, compared to the natural service daughters, and you figure that high-accuracy sire group, you implement an AI program using high-accuracy bulls, and continue to use high-accuracy bulls on those high-accuracy females versus sticking to a straight natural service system on these particular farms anyway, we saw differences in expected value over the course of a lifetime in these heifers of anywhere from about $250 up to $416, depending on what the average lifetime of these animals would be on those respective farms. So there's some tremendous value that can be acquired and attained there. I want to take a minute to step back and kind of say, you know, well, what if? You know, what if you were a cattle feeder, or maybe you are a cattle feeder? When you walk into a project like this, what would you consider to be a home run? What would you be satisfied with? I think anybody who has fed cattle would agree that targets of 10% of your animals grading prime and 50% of them grading CAB or better, 90% choice or better with the average yield grade of 3%, weighing somewhere in the ballpark of 1,100 pounds around 15 months of age would be pretty acceptable. A lot of people would take that in a heartbeat. I'm here to tell you that it can be done. That entire calf crop out of the high accuracy sire group from these three, from the three farms which they came from, finished at 16% prime. Two-thirds of them were CAB or better. They were all choice or better. And they finished at an average yield grade of 2.48, weighing 1,115 pounds at just over 13 and a half months of age. Now, if you're not familiar with looking at those types of numbers, you may not realize the impact that really is. And those cattle, if that entire, and again, this is the entire calf crop out of that sire group, if they would have been entered in the National Angus Carcass Challenge back in 06 when they were harvested, they would have finished third in that carcass challenge in the steer division. And these are commercial cows. You know, there's nothing extraordinarily fancy or great about these cows. The bottom line is, through using high accuracy sires with acceptable EPDs for the traits that you find important, you can produce cattle as good as, or close to as good as, anybody in the country. And I think that's an important point to go home with. So, sort of in conclusion, I think AI to sires with high EPD accuracies provides the opportunity to increase not only profitability, but the marketability of both terminal and breeding stock portions of your herd. And AI to sires with high accuracy offers the greatest probability. Mike talked about risk management strategies, and he kind of took words out of my mouth as I was thinking through this last night, and I was planning on using risk management, but it gives us the greatest probability or risk management strategy for making improvements and the economically relevant traits that we find important on our own operations, depending on how they vary, and to which traits we apply selection pressure to. So as I talked about earlier, and looking at those trends in terms of quality grade and AI use in the United States versus Brazil, I want you to think about these numbers and what would be the net benefit to the entire beef industry if AI use were to increase from 10% as it is today to 20% or 30% or 40%, so on and so forth. And I believe that with these type of cattle, there's opportunities for everybody involved in the supply chain to take advantages from them. Finally, this goes back to a point of staying disciplined and sticking to your goals. This is a real life example of a producer that I've worked with for several years, and back in a couple of years ago, I actually did some insemination for him, and we were going through the example of sire selection and trying to pick out bulls. And I went through this whole speech of why he should be using high accuracy bulls. You know, your commercial cattlemen take the sure bet rather than try and hit a grand slam. Just go for the line drive, steady money every time. And he agreed with me until he got back to the coffee shop, and his memory was just as long as what he had heard at the coffee shop the morning before. And he decided to use some younger bulls. Here is what happened on this particular farm from the time we bred those animals and how they changed relative to breed averages from the time those cows were bred to when those calves were weaned. You can see there was about three bulls in here that kind of held their own in steady money. And that green line is actually the only proven bull that he used. And he did drop. He did drop some. And, you know, we can probably live with changes up in this ballpark, which is more than likely where you're going to fall most of the time when you use high-accuracy bulls. But, man, deals like this will absolutely kill you. You know, they always say there's two sure things in life, and I think you can actually amend that to say there's three sure things in life. There's death, taxes, and EPDs are going to change. There's no doubt about it. You know, the best sire evaluation most bulls have will be when they are yearlings, based off their own production and the progeny production of their parents. Very few bulls over the course of time will actually see their EPDs improve. So that's why it is important to use high-accuracy bulls. So sort of in summary and conclusion, what should you take away from here today? In my mind, you got to do what makes sense. And these are the recommendations I give to producers all the time. First off, you got to make breeding decisions that minimize your risk. You know, there's risk management tools in every sector of agriculture. And to me, You know, Mike said genetics is the only tool that you have complete control over, and he's absolutely right. But through the use of high accuracy sires, that's one of the best risk management tools you have as a cattle producer. You also have to maximize returns. You know, we have to watch costs to maximize returns, and also allow for flexibility and realize that the way you market cattle today may not be the way you market cattle tomorrow or next year or 5 or 10 years down the road. So we have to allow for some market flexibility. And I'm not here to tell you if all you ever sell right now is a weaned calf or a preconditioned calf to go out and select the bull that's going to put the most marbling and ribeye into your animals. I can't tell you that. But I'm saying make breeding decisions based on what your scenario is today. And if you can get some carcass genetics behind that, you know, if you don't sacrifice the weight, but you can, you know, at weaning or whenever, but you can get carcass characteristics in there, do it, because it will allow for flexibility as you move into the future and open up new opportunities and different things. So it's been a pleasure to be here with you today. We got some time for questions, Carl.